Good evening. The Lennox Usernet is now in session. This is your net control station, Kilo Charlie 7, Mike Mike in Tigard, Oregon. My name is Russ. This net meets every Monday at 8:10 p.m. local time. For the primary purpose of this net is to share information about the Linux operating system in regards to amateur radio use. Our primary linked repeaters are the 147.32, 442.325, 444.125, and 147.040 megahertz, all having a 100 hertz tone. We're going to follow our usual format tonight. We'll begin with some general questions for the and comments for the net, have some Linux in the news, and then we'll get to the best part, which is where we talk about what we're doing with Linux and amateur radio. KC7NYR, do you have some Linux in the news for us tonight? KC7MF.
Just one item tonight. This is KC7NYR. Linux Mint 20.1 Ulyssa will arrive in mid-December with Chromium Web App Manager. This is dated October 1st. Got this from LinuxJournal.com. By the way, they're back online. That's a great news source. As the Linux Mint team is progressing to release its first point version of Linux Mint 20 series, its founder and project leader of Clement Lebreve has finally revealed the code name for the Linux Mint 20.1 Ulyssa. He's also announced that Mint 20.1 will most probably arrive in mid-December, just before Christmas. Until you wait for its beta release to test Linux Mint 20.1, Clement has also shared some great news regarding the new updates and features that you'll get with 20.1. First, packaging. The packaging of open source Chromium web browser and its updates directly through the official Mint repositories. As the team notices delays between the official release and the version available in Linux distros, they've now decided to set up their own packaging and build Chromium based on upstream code, along with some patches from Debian and Ubuntu as well. As a result, the first test build of Chromium is available to download, and you can look for that if you go ahead and Google that. Last month's blog, the Mint team introduced a new web app manager inspired by Peppermint OS and its site-specific browser application manager, ICE. It's a web app management system that will debut in Linux Mint 20.1 to turn a website into a standalone desktop application. However, the Debian package of Web App Manager 1.05 is now available to download, which comes with UI improvements, bug fixes, better translations, and languages. Another feature you'll get to be thrilled to see in Linux 20.01 is the hardware video acceleration enabled by the Solenoid video player. Hardware accelerator players will bring smoother playback, better performance, and reduced CPU usage. And lastly, besides the confirmed features, Linux Mint team is also looking for feedback on their side project by Stephen Collins. It's called Sticky Notes. It's a note-taking app, which still is in alpha stage. But if it goes well, who knows, you'll see Sticky Note apps in the upcoming Linux Mint. And that's all I got. By the way, just so you know, I'm using LMDE4 Linux Mint, and they have these Sticky Notes, and I use them, and they work quite well. That's all I have, KC7NYR. Back to net control.
All right, thank you, Mark. I'm a Linux Mint user myself, have been for some years now, and look forward to that. Does anyone have any comments or questions on anything that Mark covered there?
Whiskey 7 Kilo Lima Kilo.
Kilo Lima Kilo, go ahead.
So I wasn't sure if I heard, Mark, if you say that that Sticky Notes is going to be coming up in the next version of Linux Mint, or does it already exist?
Well, with the Ubuntu part of 20.01, it's coming out as an alpha, but it is already out with the Linux Mint Debian LMDE4 that I'm using, so that's why I use it already. So the good news is for the regular Ubuntu Linux Mint in the version 20.01, it is going to be available. So if you have that particular version, you'll be able to give it a test run. And you can also probably download it as well, is what they're saying. Now as a wait for the point release. It's a nice little program, works quite well, and you can keep your notes organized with direct links and so forth. KC7NYR.
Okay, Mark, I was doubling with you. I don't know whether anybody, KLK, were you able to copy any of that?
Yes, I believe I got it all. Thank you.
Okay, so now we're at the fun part of the net where we all get to talk about what we're doing with Linux, and particularly Linux and amateur radio. So I'll open it up to anyone who has anything you'd like to share with us. Come now, and this is Kilo Charlie 7, Mike, Net Control Station for the Linux Usernet. All right, quiet there. So I'm going to start with a question. An item last week, Kathleen, W7KLK, you had asked some questions. You were going to be using a TNC with Linux, and I'm wondering if you have any, if you had any time to devote to that, and how it came out.
This is with Whiskey 7 Kilo Lima Kilo. I had two cables that need to come in, and the second one just came in today. So I haven't actually hooked up my TNC to play with it, but I did learn something and that I didn't understand from discussions last week. I was under the impression that Linux Wine was a different version of Linux, but then I went into it and I found out it was much easier for me to set up Linux Wine. So, and so I got Linux Wine in, and then I have somehow, I'm not sure if it's installed or not, so I'm a little confused about this, but I have Pat in, but I still need to run some code or something so that I can set up the GUI. So that's where I'm at with this right now, and I guess tomorrow I can start playing with my terminal node controller a little bit.
All right. So yes, Wine can be a challenge, and I'm glad you were successful with that. I'm curious, what kind of rig do you have that you're connecting to?
Okay, now I'm going to try. It's I want to say Cam. Oh, Cam is the brand. Cam XL. Or does that sound right?
Not familiar to me. Is that your transceiver?
Yeah, my terminal node controller is that. And actually, when somebody else talks, I can actually go run into the office and find out what it's called. And then I can bring that back to the net.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it was the transceiver I was thinking about. So you're connecting through a data port on the transceiver. Is that why you needed a special cable?
Yes. So I need a cable to go from my TNC to my computer, and then I need another one that goes from the TNC to my radio, because right now I just have my handheld to do this through. My next project is to get a mobile radio, but I don't have that net yet.
Oh, okay, understood. Well, I hope you'll get some time this week to work on it and bring it back to the net next week for us.
Yeah, I hope I will have more to report then. W7KLK, back to net.
All right, thanks for that report, Kathleen. Does anybody have any questions or comments on that?
KC7NYR.
NYR.
Yeah, the name of that terminal node controller is called Camtronics. They've been around since the early 90s. So good for her, and congratulations, Kathleen. Fantastic job. Once she gets those cables all hooked up and interfaced to the computer, we sure want to hear the feedback, okay, Kathleen? Anyway, Camtronics with a K, but I don't know her model number. Fine job. KC7NYR, back to net control.
All right, Mark, I should have recognized that. I was thinking of the rig and not the TNC, so it threw me off. Anyone else have anything?
AE7GW with a question.
AE7GW.
I'm just wondering, does Kathleen have a source for that cable, or is she looking for that?
Kathleen, I think you said you actually had ordered it and received it, had you not?
Yes, that's correct. I ordered it through a ham radio outlet, and it took a while to get them because they did not have these particular ones anywhere around. They had a ship from back east. But, yeah, it was through ham radio outlet.
Okay. And, Gordon, did that take care of your question?
Yeah, and I was just going to say, for any Cantronics things, AssociatedRadio.com pretty much makes every cable on every Cantronics TNC. AE7GW, back to you.
All right, AssociatedRadio.com. Thank you for that. And this is Kilo Charlie 7 and Mike Mike, and this is the Linux Usernet, and we're looking for people who want to share their experiences with Linux and amateur radio. Come now.
KF7HVM.
KF7HVM. Go ahead, Mason.
Yeah, so a couple weeks ago I checked into the net and talked about a project that I was working on using my SDR as a scanner and how I was using an open source project called ham2mon-GUI to visualize those calls and play them back in the browser and on mobile. And while I haven't had time to get more powerful hardware yet, I dug into the open source web app and actually submitted some improvements to allow me to listen to calls in real time as they come in. So now I can sit here on my desktop and monitor multiple repeaters and have my browser just automatically play these calls as they come in. Submitted the PR to the upstream and it got accepted last week, so that felt pretty good. That's like my third open source contribution ever, so I was pretty happy about that. And my other project that I worked on was enabling comments on my otherwise statically generated site. So I got my hands dirty with Heroku, or Heroku, not quite sure how you say it, but it's like a app hosting service, and they have a free tier which gives you 1,000 free hours of runtime a month. And the cool thing about this that I found out is it will automatically start and stop your containers whether they're being used or not. So you get 1,000 free hours, but if you're not running all the time, you can have multiple services that get spun up on demand. So this is a really great tool I plan to leverage for some of my projects where I need an API endpoint up in the cloud, but I don't want to pay $5 a month to run it on DigitalOcean. I can just run it for free on Heroku and have to wait 20, 30 seconds when I want to use it occasionally. Anyway, it's been fun working on these projects, and you know, all this, I'm using Linux for everything, so I couldn't do it without that. Anyway, that's what I got. Back to net.
Oh, that's very interesting. Let's see, you the ham2mon, is that a GitHub project, and what language are they using?
So there's ham2mon, that is a Python project that interfaces with GNU Radio, and that's what actually checks the spectrum and zeroes in on the frequencies and does the decoding. That's on GitHub as ham2mon. And then the other project that I'm using is ham2mon-GUI, G-U-I, and that is a Node.js backend, so JavaScript, and then it has a React.js frontend in the browser. It was actually the first time I've used React. It's a really popular front-end JavaScript framework, and it's really cool. You can do stuff pretty easily with that, so that's kind of a new world for me to check out.
Well, that is terrific. I can express my congratulations to you for successfully doing this, and also thank you for improving the software that we're using, because we all get to benefit from that in open source. All right, and this is Kilo Charlie 7 Mike Mike, Linux Usernet, and we're still looking for people who have things to share for it with us tonight. Okay, well, I'm going to share one of my own. I spent much of today setting up a ham pi, or that is to say a Raspberry Pi running the ham pi image. And this is part of a project David, WA9 Oscar November Yankee, and I have decided to cooperate on experimenting with FreeDV. For any of you who are not familiar with that, FreeDV is a digital mode for use on HF radio. So it's similar, the same sort of digital codecs that are used for D-Star and DMR and so forth, but it's entirely free and open source, and there's no internet component to it. It is designed primarily, and David, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but designed primarily for use on HF simplex. So we're just getting started, and then this, David has a ham or a Raspberry Pi set up with running ham pi, that's H-A-M-P-I, version 1.1, and I decided to use the same thing for myself. And so today I started that process of getting that set up, so I'll go over a couple of things that I experienced in doing that. Well, I'll continue. Well, I'll skip the boring parts of my notes about downloading images. I will mention that it was a 3.3 gigabyte download. And for any of you who aren't familiar with HamPy, it's a pre-configured Raspberry Pi image that includes a vast number of amateur radio programs all installed and set up and ready to go. So all the configuration is done. That's one of the major attractions of it. So a 3.3 gigabyte download, and but that's a compressed file. By the time I expanded it, the actual image size that I burned to the SD card was 12.1 gigabytes. And even on my fast system here, both decompressing and burning took quite a long time. So I burned it to a 16 gig card because that's what I had on hand. And in the end, when I ran a DF, a disk-free command on the Raspberry Pi, it told me that I was I had used 91% of my disk. So fortunately, I don't plan on doing any large-scale data storage there. So I put the card into one of my Pi 3s and fired it up, and various things happened. I noted that SSH server is enabled by default so that I can SSH into that machine from another host without having to do anything special to set it up. And went through all the usual Raspberry Pi dialogues. I noted that it did detect my Wi-Fi system. I chose not to connect because I'm using Ethernet for this project. And ran the software update, restarted and so forth, and everything worked just fine. So as far as that part of the process, it was pretty darn painless. It was more or less a normal Raspberry Pi setup. So then I got to the next stage. The way my station is set up, I have my radios, two of them that I use daily. The one I'm using now, an IC7100, and also Flex 6600, are both located in the garage. But I have the control head for the IC7100 and the Maestro control device for the Flex radio in another room at the opposite end of the house. So in order to use FreeDV, which is an application that runs on Linux, I located the Raspberry Pi near the radio out in the garage. And since I want to actually sit in my nice, comfortable ham shack when I'm using this, I need to. I decided that the way to go would be to do a remote desktop for the Raspberry Pi. So I set about doing that. I have not done this before on Linux, a new project for me. One of the features of HamPy is that a VNC remote desktop remote server is set up and running by default. I didn't know that, but I found out when I got the thing running. And so I said, okay, well, there's the first thing I'll try. I went on into my shack and on my desktop Linux Mint machine, went shopping for VNC viewers. Found out that there are quite a number of them in the Debian repository. So I poked around a little bit and decided on one. I think it was called SSVNC, which billed itself as Tight VNC on steroids, I believe was the line they used. And I thought, okay, well, on steroids, that doesn't sound bad. So I installed it and tried to connect to the Raspberry Pi with no luck at all. Went on the internet and found out there's a bunch of configuration that needs to be done. There's a configuration file on the home drive that needs to be properly set up, and it turns out there wasn't even one there. So that was kind of discouraging that there was nothing set up from the installation of the package from the Linux Mint repository. I'm going to pause there. Kilo Charlie 7 Mike Mike, Linux Usernet. We have any comments, questions?
WA9ONY.
ONY, go ahead.
I noticed with the image, I had a 32 gig micro SD card, and it did not expand correctly after booting up with HamPy, both 1.0 and 1.1, and I had to go into the command line config and force it to expand to use all available memory space on the micro SD card. So use the command line interface, disk free, in other words, Delta Frank, and I think dash H might be the friendly, or dash V might be the verbose. I think it's dash H. Anyway, that'll give you the indication whether or not the operating system has correctly expanded and used the micro SD card completely up. Like I said, if I had, my experience has been as that has not operated correctly, even though it's supposed to operate correctly. Every time you boot up a Raspberry Pi, it should make sure it expands and use all the space on the micro SD card. Second question, I was wondering what band do you want to try on, try this out on? If you got a 7100, I believe we can do anything from 160 meters up to 70 centimeters. Doesn't have to be HF. What's your target band that you want to get set up on? Is it WA901?
Okay, well, I'm thinking for the two of us, from your location to mine, there's some ground in between, so the upper bands aren't going to do much for us. So maybe 40 or 80 meters, what do you think?
Yeah, I can do either one. I pretty much do 160 meters up to 23 centimeters. 80 meters makes sense. It's more of a local band. But whatever you want to try, I'll be glad to focus my attention on that band first. This is WA901.
All right, 80 it is, David. And I'll try that DF. For any of you who aren't familiar with the way Raspberry Pi works, you download an image and burn it onto an SD card. The image is usually smaller than the SD card, so it's supposed to automatically expand the image to fill the entire card, but as David pointed out, it doesn't always do that. But there is a manual option to require it to do that. I didn't check to see whether mine had done it, so thanks, David. I will do that. Anyone else have any comments or questions?
Kilo 00 Tango with a comment.
KS0T, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. So I'll preface this by saying that my day job is doing various forms of internet security work. And a couple of things that you mentioned when you were talking about this really kind of jumped out at me. I know that most of the time when people have Raspberry Pi devices, they don't actually make them available to the internet. But if you do, it's worth knowing that both SSH and VNC or RDP are being extremely heavily targeted due to the increase in remote work. So that's something to bear in mind. You will almost certainly be scanned within minutes of putting anything like that actually on the internet. And if you're using default passwords, you'll probably get somebody logged in that you don't want. So I guess kind of a word to the wise. The amount of scanning for those two ports has really dramatically gone up since March, and that's why I wanted to mention it. It's good practice anyways. Obviously, you know, set a good password and so forth, but just wanted to mention that. KS0T back to net.
Indeed, very sound advice. Yes, you know, any time you're installing a new system, the first thing you want to do is change default passwords, and if possible, change default users. With Raspberry Pi, the default user is Pi, P-I, and the password is Raspberry. They urge you, in fact, that's the way the thing starts up. The first thing they want you to do is enter a new password, so they're good about that. But I also intend, even though I'm going to use mine entirely on my internal network, to put in a different user and to always log in as that user as well, so they can't guess the username as easily. So thank you very much for that.
WA901.
ONY.
Yeah, also another thing I do with the computers here in the ham shack, I do not use Wi-Fi connections at all. I use my hard LAN cables to a switch, and then the switch goes to a regular router, and then that router goes off to the house router. So I actually have two levels of router, firewall between the ham radio stuff and Comcast. The other thing is by not doing Wi-Fi, HamPi will phone home and do some processing if you read the license. And I just simply unplugged the LAN cable, and it's not going to be doing any phoning home or doing anything like the HamPi is set up to do. That's how I can reduce my visibility. Also, by the way, a LAN connection is a much faster connection than even a 5 gig Wi-Fi connection. This is WA9 online.
Thank you, David. Also, all good advice. And if you can use cable for your network, that's always the first choice as far as I'm concerned. I did indeed decide not to use Wi-Fi with this. Not only are the data rates generally slower, and it's less secure, but there's lots of interference if you happen to live in town and you got lots of Wi-Fi running around you. So in my case, I've got some Mikrotik routers that let me set up some virtual LANs, and I'm in the process of setting up one of those for my amateur radio stuff to isolate further. Okay, well, let me continue on with my story. There's not that much more. I decided not to use to go through the effort of getting VNC running. I found in the Linux Mint forums a lot of head scratching and hair pulling about that. I decided to go ahead and try another one that I was aware of and was kind of inclined to use in the first place, and that's one called No Machine. And No Machine uses the NX protocol for a remote desktop. And I think they're the people who actually, I don't know if they created it, but they're the ones who. So that is not one that's in the Linux Mint repository. I had to go to the No Machine website and download two different .deb packages. For any of you who are not familiar with that, a package with a file extension of .deb is usually an installable package on a Debian system using the system repository manager, in other words, apt. Actually, the way you install it from a command line is to say dpackage dpkg dash I, and that will install the package. So No Machine website, they have just tons of packages ready to download for different architectures. There's a whole page of different ones for Raspberry Pi, and then there are a bunch of them for Intel architecture. So for my desktop, I downloaded one of the AMD 64, and for Raspberry Pi, I had to find out what version of processor I had. Raspberry Pi runs on the ARM architecture. So there at the command line, I ran uname, that's UNAME, dash A, alpha, that told me that I had a version 7 ARM processor, so I downloaded the installation file, the dev file for that particular version. On the Pi, I ran dpackage.i, as I said, and it installed it nicely. It was automatically configured to run at the startup, and indeed it was running when I looked at it. It put a separate menu entry in there. And by the way, it runs the server automatically, so there are two pieces, the server and the client, so that you can with the server, share the machine that it's running on, and with a client, you can get into other machines that are sharing. On my desktop machine, I did the same thing with the appropriate AMD 64 package, and that was pretty much the same way. It all started up. Now, this uses SSH, so it's an entirely secure protocol. So, again, I'm happy I had SSH going on the Raspberry Pi and with a good password. First time I tried it, it didn't connect, and crashed the Raspberry Pi. I think what happened is I put in a bad password, and obviously, well, if that was what I did, then and I had no way of actually telling, then that was unprobable. So I tried again, and it was very careful to make sure I got the right password, and it connected, and I was running the Raspberry Pi sitting here on my desktop machine in the ham shack. So that was all great. The only problem that I ran into was that after a while, it timed out. And when it timed out, it locked up the Raspberry Pi. And I mean locked up completely. There was no response to keyboard, mouse, anything, nothing I could do. I ended up having to do a cold reboot, which I hate to do. But that was my only option. So that's the problem. We got to troubleshoot. I'm not sure what's going on there. That's as far as I got. There are a couple other things that I could try, and I think just for the experience, and that is X11 forwarding over SSH, and also it's possible to using a utility called SOCAT. That's SOCAT. To forward serial ports over a network. So one of the things I want to try is running the FreeDB software on my desktop machine and seeing if I can get the serial port of the Raspberry Pi to show up on my desktop machine and transparently do it that way. Well, we'll see whether that works. So that's my story, and there's going to be a lot more. Anyone have any comments or questions? This is KC7MM, Linux Usenet.
NYR.
NYR.
Hey, thank you, Russ. Very, very interesting. Fine work, by the way. And I do want to hear, you know, the end of the story. So thank you so much for bringing that to the net. KC7NYR.
Oh, you're welcome, Mark. Happy to. And I decided, you know, there are a lot of good videos on YouTube, including some made by David. Covering a lot of this material, but I decided to kind of do it from scratch, as if so that I can witness firsthand the difficulties or whatever in getting things running like that. It seems like it ought to just bing bang boom, and I ended up spending about 6 hours on this today.
My, yeah, it sounds like you worked hard, and you know, that's fine work. So thank you so much, and. Maybe you could take a break now and think about a cup of coffee. Anyway, thank you so much, Russ. KC7NYR.
All right, and this is KC7MM, Linux Usenet. Roy, KI7PKL, you had said last week, I think, that you were hoping to spend some time with your Pine phone. Any news on that or your tablet?
Well, it's like this. I was watching the UbiPorts show that they do on YouTube every couple of weeks, where they answer questions and bring up, you know, latest news and stuff like that. And, you know, after I got done watching it, I got to thinking, you know, it doesn't sound like this is going to happen anytime soon. I've been testing this thing since February, after all. And my Pixel XL barely runs anymore because the battery's worn out and it can't be replaced. So I this week I ordered a new phone on Amazon and paid a little bit more than the Pine phone. It's a Moto G7, and the nice thing about that is that it's a fairly new phone. It came out in 2019, and it's supported by Lineage OS, I pause. So anyway, it was prime. It came after a couple of days and so forth. I've been sitting here messing with it here for the last, pretty much all afternoon, actually. No, actually, I did something else, too, for a while, too. But actually, a Linux project that didn't go well. But it is possible to unlock the bootloader, but there's an unfortunate, I think very unfortunate, trend starting to appear here that phones that do allow you to unlock the bootloader, you may have to go to their website, sign up, agree to their terms of service for their website. I know I read at least two terms of service, two or three in the process of doing this yesterday, and which is quite annoying. But When I got all done, I was able to unlock the bootloader after I exchanged the code, sent them a code, they sent me a code, and now they know exactly who unlocked their bootloader. Well, that's just the best I can do. I paused. So, you know, I haven't given up on the Pine phone, but there just hasn't been a whole lot of movement there, things visible to the naked eye, as it were, here of late. And I really needed a phone that worked and would run longer than an hour. So that's what we did. I also spent some time playing with what we were talking about last week at some point. And that is trying to get Winlink Express to run under Wine. And I tried that Play on Linux thing. It doesn't appear to support Winlink Express, although it's kind of cool. If you're using one of the apps that it does support, it looks like it just does it for you, and it probably works great, but the apps I wanted to run weren't on there, so I uninstalled that. Then I went back to trying to do just regular Wine, and actually had the article I was looking, I think maybe several of us may have been looking at it last week, how to run Wine under Ubuntu 20.04. And still couldn't get Winlink Express to work. I kept getting this error about trying to run a 32-bit application in a 64-bit space. So I got a little bit of figuring out to do. I know before when I was running Wine, I had both. And I'm not quite sure how I did that, but I'm going to have to go back to the drawing board and try to figure that out. So I'm really hoping that it said that it does work, so I'm hoping I can figure out how to get it to work. I really don't want to run that commercial application. I think it costs $39. It escapes me at the moment what it's called. But the thing about that, it's just another terms of service to agree to and another license agreement to pay. I have to remember what I can and can't do, so I'm really hoping I can figure out how to get this work natively. All right, with that, enough rambling from me. This is KI7PKL.
All right, that's disheartening that you had to go buy another phone, but, well, sometimes we have to bow to the realities of life. Let's hope that the Pine phone can come along and relieve you of that. Let me mention two things. On Play on Linux, they have a long list of applications that they can install automatically for you. The trick there is, I think it's in the lower left-hand corner, there's an obscure little button. You have to kind of be looking for it that says Install Other Program. And that's the one that lets you go in and install things that aren't on the list. So if you didn't try that, you might give that another look. And there's a trick on running Wine on Linux, and that is you have to install the 32-bit architecture on Linux. And I'm trying, for the life of me, I can't remember. Play on Linux will help you do that, but it's a package in the repository that you can install that installs a 32-bit architecture, because even Windows 10 still contains some of the old Win32 API stuff, so you have to have that 32-bit architecture to make it go. So this is KC7MM Linux Usenet. Does anybody else have any comments or questions on Roy's stuff?
KC7NYR.
NYR?
I just want to thank Roy for being a trooper and going for the Pine phone, and it didn't work at this point. Maybe it'll work at a future date. I'm looking at the Motorola G7 as well. But I think it'll come back to Pine phone eventually, you know, just not right now. Anyway, thanks, Roy, for everything. You're a trooper, man. You've provided us with a lot of updates over the last few months, so thank you so much. KC7NYR, back to net control.
All right, and so we're up to, well, just a little past 9:02. So let's make a last call for anyone who has comments, questions, even check-ins for the net.
Whiskey7KiloLimaKilo with a question.
KLK, go ahead.
So I'm looking at my notes from last week, and then when it was being discussed on Linux Wine, and then the people that wanted to try and use Winlink Express. And what something mentioned was called, what I thought they were saying was Pat or Papa Alpha Tango, but and then you mentioned something called Play on Linux Are those the same thing and I wasn't hearing something right, or are those two different things?
Okay, yeah, actually, well, three different things. PAT, P-A-T, is a native Linux WinLink client, so you don't need Wine to run PAT. You can install that, and it runs as a native Linux program. If you want to run the WinLink Express, I can't remember what it's called now, SM something Express, then you need Wine. So what Play on Linux is it's kind of a wrapper around Wine. It's an application that you can install from the Linux repository, and it helps you with a lot of the configuration of Wine. So if you install Play on Linux, it also installs Wine as a dependency and provides a graphical interface for working with Wine and getting it configured and running programs under it. So if you wanted to run the WinLink Express, you would install Wine by itself, or you can use Play on Linux to install it and use that to try to run the Windows program. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, I think so. That is helpful. That cleared up a lot of stuff for me. Thank you.
All right, you're welcome. Anyone else before we close?
NYR, just a couple quick announcements, and then we can close up there.
Okay, go ahead, Mark.
First of all, please join the Linux Usernet at the Linux Usernet at groups.io. Our very own WA9ONY has set this group up. We're up to 61 members. If you have not joined, there's a ton of information there with links to reference material to this net, and it's very useful, okay? If you have not joined, please do so. It's very non-intrusive. Lastly, if you ever miss a Linux Usernet, please join. We have recorded sessions that David has recorded. Just go to kc7nyr.com /Linux/recorded net sessions, or if you want to remember that, just click on the Linux tab under my website, kc7nyr.com, and you can listen to any previous recorded session in your leisure. That's all I got, KC7NYR. Thank you.
All right, and thank you. With that, the Linux Usernet is now closed at 9.07 p.m. This net operates through the courtesy of the Amateur Radio Relay Group, Incorporated. If you want to learn more about supporting this repeater system, please visit ARRG at www.arrg.org. If you have questions, feedback, and comments, send an email to linuxusernet@kc7nyr.com. For past sessions with links to reference material, search our Linux pages located at kc7nyr.com or kc7mm.com. We thank all stations who participated and those who stood by to give us a clear operating frequency. You can continue the discussion with us on the Linux Usernet group at groups.io. This is Kilo Charlie 7 Mike Mike, returning the frequency to normal amateur use. Thank you all for being here, and see you next week, 7-3, KC7MM.